Hi, welcome to Marvelous Mysteries, the podcast. I'm Rebecca.
And I'm Jaden.
And today we're going to cover some unsolved mysteries that we both found this week. So, but first we're going to start off with, like, a couple icebreaker questions as per usual that we just found that I will read. So the first one is, what is your absolute dream job? If money wasn't a factor, you can create your own, like, whatever.
Me to go first or you?
Yeah, you can go
okay.
first.
I don't know. I feel like I've always had multiple. Like, from a very young age, I've always had the idea of being a stay-at-home mom. Like, I feel like that counts as a job.
Yeah, that definitely counts as a job.
But, like, I also had the idea of, like, just having, I guess, any job that you can do from home. Like, I really like writing, so I feel like if I could be, like, a writer from home. But, like, I'm also not that good at writing, so maybe we'll just stick with the first one. But what about you?
I would also love to be a housewife. That's one of mine. But I don't even need to have the kids. I would just stay at home. But,
okay.
I also, I think I would like to be, I want to be, work at the FBI, and I want to be, like, a criminal profiler, like, in Criminal Minds. Like, I always loved that show. And I was like, that's what I want to do, but, I don't know if I'm cut out for the, especially the running into
gruesome, or as you mean,
yeah, like chasing, yeah, literally yeah. chasing down the killers.
I don't know. I've always thought, like, being, like, a detective or something would be kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
One, I'm like, I don't know if my brain is, that evolved, but also I'm like, I don't know, once it gets to the point where, like, you have to go after someone, I don't know if I could do that. Like, I feel like, I don't know.
I really just want to go to the FBI school.
You're like, I just want to, I just be there. I just want to vibe.
Or I would also like, honestly, I would like to be the first lady. That's, like, not even possible.
You could, like, talk to your husband about that.
Yeah, because I'd like to know all the tea. I'd like to know, like, everything that's going on. I'd like
inside information.
Yeah, I'd like all the clothes. Like, I get to wear cute outfits, go to events. That'd be great. Okay, so the next one is, what is the worst style choice you have ever made, like, with clothes?
Okay, here's the thing. Well, I feel like for, like, most of, like, I would say probably from, like, elementary school to, like, after elementary school, yeah, early elementary school to, like, after middle school, I feel like I was very much, like, tomboy. Like, I wore, like, just, like, sweats, sweatshirts, like, very, like, general things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would say freshman and sophomore year were really my years of exploring. There was a day, I remember this clearly, because my friend was like, what the heck are you wearing? Because I was wearing, like, bootcut jeans, right? Which, like, okay, like, not too bad.
Mm-hmm.
Tennis shoes. And I had, like, a graphic Harry Potter tee and then a cardigan. And, like, that might not sound very bad.
That doesn't sound that bad.
But, like, the color choices and everything okay. that were went together was just not it.
I think the worst fashion choice I ever made was probably, I mean, they were in style at the time, but I wore, like, gauchos. Do you know what they are?
No. Okay, maybe if I saw them, I would, but I don't know.
I'm going to show you what they are. You probably had them. I had them in, like, first grade.
I feel like there's been a lot worse that I've worn, though. I'm trying to think real hard, but, like, I was just a kid.
These.
That was... Oh.
Everyone had them. They were really in style, so it was like, but those are, like, one of the worst things that I've ever seen. Like, the early 2000s style was so bad, I feel like.
So,
that,
yeah.
Or, like, I probably made some, some not great fashion choices in, like, my freshman and sophomore year. Like, when I was a sophomore or something, I only wore sports bras. Like, with, like,
yeah.
a dress I wanted to go.
Yeah. No, yeah. It was before I knew what to do.
Yeah.
I feel like once I got hit, like, senior year or after I graduated, then, like, I was like, okay,
yeah.
I know what to dress like. My closet is much better now than
yeah.
I would say.
Well, the thing is, they were in style, too, though. So, it's like, that's
it's like, what? Yeah.
Okay. So, the next question is, which fictional world or fictional place would you like to visit?
Ooh, I don't know. I feel like there's...
I mean, obviously, I want to say, like, Harry Potter world.
Yeah, I was going to say, but I feel like that's very, I don't know, common.
Yeah, but I also, there's probably, like, a lot cooler things I'm trying to think of, like,
Should I say the world from my own story that I
read? The world from your own story.
From my own book. I don't know, I feel like I've read a number of books, but I feel like they've always been in series. It's like, I don't know, because I also haven't, like, I feel like read that many, like,
yeah, a lot of the books I've read are, like, just realistic fiction, so they're taking place in this world, but I think I would also,
like, Percy Jackson, do you,
I don't know, yeah, if you ever read, I read that. All those, so, like, that'd be cool. I'd also like to do, like, Atlantis or something like, oh, that, yeah, would be cool. Cool.
That would be cool. Atlantis would be sweet. Mm-hmm. I'll say Percy Jackson, maybe not, because there's also, like, gods and things always trying to kill you that maybe I would, yeah, not want to do. Unless I was a god.
Yeah, then that'd be good.
That'd be great.
So who's your favorite Disney hero or heroine or just character? And if, would you trade their places with them? If you could.
Are we doing, like, solely cartoon ones? Because, I mean, like, Marvel and stuff is part of...
Let's do, like, just literal just, like, Disney cartoon kind Disney, of. Like, stuff you... I guess technically Marvel is, but, like, the literal Disney stuff, so, like...
Like, the original kind of...
Yeah. So, like, not Star Wars either.
Yeah.
I think my favorite Disney movie, I think, is Tangled.
I like that one, too. And I love... Flynn Rider was what I was gonna say.
Flynn Rider, really? yeah, I do. I like his character. I like Rapunzel, too. And I would trade places with her, I guess, because, I mean, afterwards.
Get yourself a man.
Yeah.
You already have one.
I have one. But I also could be a princess, which would be cool in the end.
I don't know. I feel like I'm trying to think of other characters that aren't just Disney princesses. Because I was talking this with a coworker of mine the other day, because, I don't know, we had really nothing else to do. So I was like, hey, like, were you ever the type of person that was ever, like, while growing up, like, oh, I want to be a Disney princess, and she was like, no. I was like, see, yeah, neither was I. I was like, I always want to be, like, Indiana Jones or something.
I want to be, did you ever watch Kim Possible?
Yeah.
Okay, I wanted to be Kim Possible. Like, she had red hair like me, and I was like, that's me, I'm Kim Possible. And she was so cool.
I am Kim Possible.
She was awesome. So I would be her, too.
I don't know, I'm trying to think. I can only think of, like, guy characters.
Well, you can be, like, a guy.
I guess so.
Like, you could be if you trade places, like, the persona, with them. But really, they could be your favorite person. And you could say, I wouldn't trade places with them.
I'm trying to think of, like, any... I really don't know, I guess. Mary Poppins.
Mary Poppins. Oh, wait, what would you say your spirit animal is?
That's my question. I feel like I should have an answer ready.
Honestly, like, realistically, it's probably, like, a cat, because it's... They're kind of lazy, and they just, like, sleep 18 hours a day, which is, like, realistic. Or probably something like a penguin or something that's, like, really weird and awkward. Because, like, I'm just, like, not graceful. Because cats are maybe graceful. I'm, like, a really weird cat. It's not graceful, and I'm lazy. I'm trash. Just kidding.
Have you ever seen, is it called Open Season? With the bear and the...
Deer. I think so, a very long time ago.
Because I think, like, in the second one, I don't know if you ever saw the second one, but there's, like, a cat in there who's, like, really, like, he's just, like, really clumsy and stuff like that. He could be that one.
Yeah.
It's, like, really nasty.
That's
then.
What I am.
I don't know. I'm trying to think of, like, how do I come up as a person? I would for sure not be a water animal because I hate the water. Well, I don't hate the water, but I can't swim, and there's just unknown things in the ocean.
Yeah. I mean, so, if I was a dolphin, that'd be cool, or shark or something, because then no one would eat you, but I don't know. You could probably be, like, actually, I think you're, like, a deer.
Graceful.
Yes, because they're, like, you, like, kind of, like, you have the long legs and stuff, but they're, like, graceful and stuff, and, like...
I'm not really that graceful. I'm very clumsy. Have you not seen
that? But they're also clumsy. They could be either, so...
I don't know.
That's okay. What I would think of. Something like that, maybe.
Okay, I'll just do, like a fawn.
A fawn?
Or, like, yeah. I don't know, because I don't know what else to do.
A beautiful one.
A beautiful fawn.
Okay, so who's your favorite superhero and why? Okay, so I wrote these, so I already had a thing in mind. So, I don't really like, I know, like, your family really likes them, but, like, I don't really like superhero movies that much. They're okay. I never grew up with them, but when I really like Wonder Woman. So, when I saw Wonder Woman, I was like, that's a queen. I love her. I want to be her. Like, yes. So I think that was my favorite. And it's also probably one of my favorite movies. It's not Marvel, but, because I almost said Marvel movies. But she's my favorite. And I would not, I just like her. And I want to be Wonder Woman. And she's beautiful.
I want to be Wonder Woman. well, I prefer Marvel. So we're just going to start off on that foot. No, I don't know. I do like, I do like Scarlet Witch's powers just because, like, I, like, the whole, like, telekinesis thing, like, whenever people are like, oh, if you could have a superpower, what would it be? And like, everybody's always like, flight or, like, super strength. Like, no, freaking telekinesis, because you can, like, I don't know, I mean, like, if you've ever seen any movies. I don't
know, teleport.
But I don't know, I also, like, I don't know if it really classifies as a superhero, but I've always liked Hawkeye, because I've always really liked archery, so I've always been like, yes. But I guess one of those two characters, if I had to choose one.
Okay. And the final one is, if you could have any animal as a pet, and it wasn't dangerous or illegal, just anything you want, what would you get?
I've always wanted a tiger.
A tiger?
Or like, yeah.
I would want to say that, like a tiger or something, but I really want a pet deer. Like, I know I said this, I want you to think
that. No. I want you.
No, I always see them, and they're so cute, and I'm like, I want a pet deer, and I tell my husband, I want a pet deer, and he's like, you can't do that.
And he's like, no.
He's like, it's illegal. But I want to pet a deer, and I want a pet deer, because they're so cute.
I've also really liked raccoons. Your sister is always like, you have a problem. She sends me raccoon videos now and then.
They're so cute. They have the one where they grab their hands.
And like,
yeah.
Maybe a raccoon, because then he could steal things from me. I mean, yeah, I probably wouldn't use him for
that. You can get a pet. I've seen people that have pet skunks. You just get the, like,
oh, yeah, I
their
saw
thing them. Removed. The stink,
so cute.
The thing. Yeah. I think it's legal. I don't know where you get them, though. Okay, so let's get on to the actual podcast. So do you want to go first, or do you want me to go first?
I guess I don't care. How many? Mine's 7 pages.
Okay, mine.
I mean, but, like, I'm not going to read all the information.
Mine is
from
8.
It.
Mine is very creepy, if that's helpful, and I don't know. I don't know if that helps
we
you.
We can do rock, paper, scissors, best 2 out of 3. Whoever wins.
Let's just do one.
Oh, like whoever wins the first one
yeah,
goes? Okay.
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot. Okay.
Okay, you go first.
I'm going first. Okay. Okay, so this one is called The Case of the Watcher. So, it's about this family. So, it's Derek and Maria Broaddus. I think that's how you say it. It's spelled Broaddus. Broaddus? That's what I would guess. So they moved to Westfield, New Jersey in their home they bought between June and August of 2014. They never lived there. So the couple bought the home for $1 million. I don't even say this. It's like over $1 million. So a little over $1.3 million. And ended up spending about $100,000 on renovations. Because they bought this as, like, their forever home.
Oh, to be rich.
Yes, they had a lot of money. But they never lived there because of these letters they got. And so, just to show how bad the letters were, the house just sold, like, a year ago in July for $959,000. So they lost, like, over $400,000 on it. Okay, so when they first moved in, they received this letter. Dearest new neighbor at 657 Boulevard, allow me to welcome you to the neighborhood. 657 Boulevard has been the subject of my family for decades, and now, as it approaches its 110th birthday, I have been put in charge of watching and waiting for its second coming. My grandfather watched the house in the 1920s, and my father watched it in the 1960s. It is now my time. Do you know the history of the house? Do you know what lies within the walls of 567 Boulevard? Why are you here? I will find out. So they received this letter, spent the week on high alert. Derek, he canceled this work trip. Whenever Maria took their kids to the new house, basically she would watch them, but she'd like yell their name every time they would get too far from her sight. And the, oh, it's a little out of order now. But he basically, the letter said, like, it'll be nice to have, like, new young blood in the neighborhood because they had kids. And, like, apparently a neighbor said, it'll be nice to have some young blood in the neighborhood. And they were like, what? But, so 2 weeks after, they got another letter. It says, welcome again to your new home at 557 Boulevard. The workers have been busy, and I have been watching you and unload carfuls of your personal belongings. The dumpster is a nice touch. Have they found what's in the walls yet? I'm sure they will. So he, basically, the letter, like, addressed Derek and Maria directly, but it misspelled their names, their last name. And he identified the three kids' names in their both birth order and in the nicknames that the kids have been yelling. And so this is where he said, I'm pleased to know your names in the name of the young blood that you have brought to me. You certainly say their names often. Okay, and then here, these are really long letters. I pasted all of them because they're creepy. But, okay, so he's like, 657 Boulevard is anxious for you to move in. It has been years and years since the young blood ruled the hallways of the houses. Oh my God. So creepy. Have you found all of the secrets it holds yet? Will the young blood play in the basement? Are they too afraid to go down there alone? I would be very afraid if I were them. It's far away from the rest of the house. If you were upstairs, you would never hear them scream. Will they sleep in the attic, or will you all sleep on the second floor? Who has the bedroom facing the street? I'll know as soon as you move in. It will help me to know who is in which bedroom. Then I can plan better. All of the windows and doors at 557 Boulevard allow me to watch you and track you as you move through the house. Who am I? I am the watcher, and I have been in control of 657 Boulevard for the better part of 2 decades now. The Woods family turned it over to you, and it was their time to move on, and they kindly sold them when I asked them to. I pass by many times a day. 657 Boulevard is my job, my obsession, and now you too, and he spelled their name wrong, Bratis, that's how he spelled that family. Well, welcome to the product of your greed. Greed is what has brought me the past three families to 657 Boulevard and has now brought you to me. Happy moving. You know I will be watching. So they stopped bringing the kids to the house. They weren't sure when they were going to move in because they kept getting these letters. And he would say, like, send them letters saying, like, where are you? This house is missing you.
There was, like, no, like, senders, like,
thing. No, so it's, like, was left outside their house.
Okay.
Like, just hand-delivered. So, many of the residents say the town is, like, this idyllic, like, fancy neighborhood. It's 45 minutes from New York. It's too slow of a town for, like, single pieces. It's, like, a family, you know, like, cookie cutter or perfect. It's, like, the 30th safest mm-hmm. town. Like, you know, like, it's a whatever, perfect town. So, the house... But it's a very competitive market, like, yeah, so their house was, like, the best street to live on. It was, like, right in the center of something that was, like, very beautiful. That's why they spent almost $1.4 million on it. So, Derek talked to his neighbor, John Schmidt, who lived two doors down, and he told him about the Langfords, who lived between them. Peggy Langford was in her 90s, and several of her adult children, all in their 60s, lived with her. The family was a bit odd, but harmless. That's what Schmidt said. He thought they were kind of like, the youngest one, Michael, was kind of like a Boo Radley character. So Derek thought these people must be doing it. The family had lived in the house since the 60s, which is what the letter had said. The father of the family had died 12 years earlier, and they told the detective about, that was, like, investigating these letters about the family, but he said he already questioned them. He brought Michael in for the police headquarters for an interview, but he denied knowing anything, and there's, like, no hard evidence, so there's nothing they could do. So Derek, became super obsessed with watching the house. He set up all these webcams. He spent nights sitting in his house, crouched in the dark, waiting to see if anyone was going to come up at the house or look for people. He, like, set up shop in the house with, like, all these documents, like, new friends. Like, he became literally obsessed with it. It sounds like he had a map of all the neighbors and the different ranges of, like, of earshots, like, how they would... like, what distance you'd have to be able to hear his wife yelling. There are only a few houses that fit the criteria. And so Derek also turned to several experts. He hired a private investigator who staked out the neighborhood, ran background checks on the Langfords, didn't find anything. He reached out to, a former FBI agent who served as inspiration for Clarence Starling, apparently, in Silence of the Lambs. They knew each other somehow. And then he hired Robert Linehan, who was a former FBI agent, to conduct an assessment. The FBI agent's assessment was that it was someone older just because of the way the envelope was addressed. It had, like, some old-fashioned ticks and stuff. The letters had a certain literary panache, I think the word is, which suggested a big reader. Mm-hmm. And there was a lack of profanity, and there wasn't much profanity, even though there was so much anger in the letter. Because he was also, like, super mad about the renovations they were doing. He thought they were, the Watcher or whatever, was destroying the house. So they thought them in a less macho person.
Sounds like it would be someone who, like, used to own the house then, right?
Yeah, that's one of the things they thought. So, sorry, I lost my place.
No, you're sorry.
They thought it was someone who lost the house, who lost the sale to the house, like, someone really angry at him. Someone thought that maybe it was because of a Keanu Reeves movie, that he's just crazy. He didn't think that he was going to watch any threats, but the letter had a lot of typo and errors which implied erraticism. So, like, some dates were wrong, like they'd say Tuesday, June 4th, but that was a Wednesday, and also seeing the seething anger directed at the wealthy. So he was, like, obsessed at the new money. So then he also, this is one of the things he wrote, the house is crying from all the pain it's going through. You have changed it and made it so fancy. You're stealing from its history. It cries from the past and what it used to be at the time where I roamed its halls. The 1960s were a good time for 657 Boulevard. When I ran from room to room, imagining the life with the rich occupants there, the house was full of life and young blood. Then it got old, and so did my father, but he kept watching until the day he died, and now I watch and wait for the day the young blood will be mine again. So they thought maybe, like, it was, like, a former housekeeper and the descendant.
Like a butler or something.
Maybe they were jealous that they bought a house that he couldn't afford, but basically the Langfords were the biggest, suspect. Derek sent a letter to the Langfords saying that they were going to tear down the house to elicit some sort of response. There was no response. They had brought in Michael again, went nowhere. His sister Abby accused the police of harassing the family. And yeah, like, basically there's no reason for them to be at, like, there's no evidence, nothing, like, they couldn't do anything. There are reasons to suspect other suspects. I guess they tested the DNA on the letter, and it was a female DNA, like, screen, so maybe they thought it was his sister. Mm-hmm. And then a private investigator found some child sex offenders within the blocks. There was also a couple behind them that kept a pair of lawn chairs sitting, like, really close to their property, so they'd sit and, like, be able to see the yard.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I don't know, my dad, like, watches all his neighbors, so,
like it's just, like, a sunbathing spot or something.
Yeah, they're just, like, chilling. My grandpa, I think, he literally has binoculars. So, like, because he lives on a golf course, so he'll, like...
Oh, okay, he'll watch the people golf,
like,
and stuff.
Sometimes, or just anyone, they're both my dad and grandpa are really nosy about neighbors. Like, my dad... Sometimes my dad's, like, they'll get home from work. My dad goes, they're home. Like, okay. Like, he's just bored. Basically, the investigation stalled. There's no digital trail, no fingerprints, no way to tie anyone. Blah, blah, blah. They looked into it was time for them to move in eventually. They had a new alarm system. They had all this stuff. They were, like, super anxious about moving in. They were, like, I'm scared to have my kids there, to have my kids have friends over. Well, we get a new letter every week, blah, blah, blah. I guess Derek priced out, like, trained German shepherds on a website for military veterans, but they didn't want to feel so, like, trapped in their house, and they thought they were putting their kids in harm's way, so, and they kept getting these letters. So it says, 657 Boulevard is turning on me, it's coming after me. I don't understand why. What spell did you cast on it? It used to be my friend, and now it is my enemy. I'm in charge of 657 Boulevard, and it is not in charge of me. I will fend off its bad habits and wait for it to become good again. It will not punish me. I will rise again. I will be patient and wait for this to pass and for you to bring the young blood back to me. 657 needs young blood. It needs you. Come back. Let the young blood play again like I once did. Let the young blood sleep in 657 Boulevard. Stop changing it and let it alone. So they decided to sell their house.
As you probably would.
Because of all that. But basically, they couldn't sell it. Word got around that of all the letters, so no one would buy it. Like, there were several people that loved the house. But there were too many rumors. They had to put a disclosure in their realtor mentioning the letters. And interesting, like, and then if someone, like, made an offer, actually, then they would give them the letters. And so, like, people would bid on the house, but then they get the letters, and then they'd be like, never mind.
Oh, like, the person would send those people letters? Or, like,
the family would show them.
Oh, the letters that they got.
Yeah, okay, so, like, so they knew what could happen.
Right.
Which is fair. Like, that's nice of them, too.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's, like, if they actually legally had to do that, but I'm guessing they must have otherwise.
Probably.
Yeah. But they file a legal complaint against the previous owners eventually. Because saying they should have disclosed the letter. But basically, the other families, they didn't really get any. And, like, they felt really safe in the neighborhood. They never felt watched. They left their doors unlocked. Whatever. So, kept looking into Michael. Michael was diagnosed with schizophrenia as a young man. He sometimes spooked newcomers to the neighborhood when he did strange things, like walk into their backyard or peek into the windows of their homes while they were being renovated. But people who knew him, like, said it was, like, he's just on, but he's kind and has the best attention. He goes out, and one guy said he goes out and gets the newspapers for me every single morning, and people didn't think he was capable of writing those letters. He was just kind of odd and strange, but I don't know. I think he looked into the rooms of renovated houses, which isn't that weird, I guess. But I already said that. And then eventually, so I told you that they found the woman's DNA, the detective working on the case said that the, DNA didn't match her, and, the detective told them eventually that they had ruled out the Langfords as suspects, but they didn't tell them how or why, so they're just like, they're not suspects anymore, so, strange. I don't know. Sorry, this saddle all over the place.
Yeah, you're good.
So they, again, opened their personal investigation.
I would have just, like, moved to a different state.
Yeah, I know. It would have been such a financial hit for them.
Yeah.
Like, they couldn't sell the house, so they were, like, paying for that one and paying for, like, the rent wherever they were living. And a payment on $1 million house is quite a bit, I'm guessing. So, like, they compared the, like, handwriting to people's Christmas cards they got. Like, they were, like, obsessed with their neighbors, as I guess you would be, you know, like.
You'd be skeptical of everyone, probably.
Yeah, so they hired Robert Leonard, who is a renowned forensic linguist. But when he read it, he didn't find any overlap when he looked at, like, forums. Although he did think the author might watch Game of Thrones, because Jon Snow is one of the watchers on the wall. I don't know why he thought that.
He's like, by the way, Game of Thrones, yeah. I've seen it.
yeah, like, there's nothing. I just spilled my coffee a tiny bit.
It's okay.
Are you sure?
It's an old carpet. I mean, there's tissues right there if you want to try, but it's okay.
Okay. So, basically, a lot of people thought that the family had buyer's remorse over the house, that they didn't want it, so they wrote the letters to themselves to somehow get out of the sale. They thought it was maybe the husband trying to get some sort of insurance money, or they're angling for a movie deal. But they were offered, this doesn't make total sense because they're offered several movie deals, turned them down, and they wrote several cease and desist letters to people that wrote them, and people were like, well, they had a $315,000 house, then they got a $770,000 house, and now they get a $1.3 million house. People were like, they just regret it, and then the guy was like, this is America, like, I just make more money now. So it's kind of like, it doesn't make, like, much logical sense. None of the theories did, though. They answered all these questions, they disclosed it, so in 2016, they put it back on the market, hoping to get more interest. They held a really nice open house, like, and they spent hours researching every person and compare their handwriting to the letters.
Mm-hmm.
But every time a buyer expressed interest, they would read the letters and back out. Yeah. Because it's creepy. So their estate lawyer said that they should sell the house to a developer. They could tear down the house and split the property into two sellable homes. They could get $1 million for the lot. But the public had to, like, do a public forum on it, basically. And a lot of people thought, like, they were scam artists or something. People thought that they were in over their head with this house, and they're just trying to get it back or whatever, and they thought it was, like, a ploy. But, like, even if they sold it for $1 million, they're losing, like, over $400,000. Yeah. And they made renovations to the house, which wouldn't make sense to me. But, so they rejected the proposal. But after all that, they found someone, a family, to rent it to. The family wasn't scared. They had,
backbones of steel.
Yeah. Well, they had grown-up children, big dogs. He said he wasn't worried. But he had, like, a reason to back out of the lease if there was another letter if he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
But when Derek went back, because he's, like, the, what's the word? Like, landlord to trim some trees. They got a new letter that said, that was addressed to them saying, violent winds and bitter cold to the vile and spiteful Derek and his wench of a wife, Maria. So this is what it says. You wonder who the watcher is? Turn around, idiots. Maybe you even spoke to me once of the so-called neighbors who had no idea who the watcher could be. Or maybe you do know and you're too scared to tell anyone. Good move. So these letters were a lot more angry. It seemed the writer had been, like, following the story. They'd seen the media coverage. As they said, I walked by the news trucks when they took over my neighborhood and mocked me. He found out about Derek's investigations, apparently. I watched you as you watched from the dark house in an attempt to find me. Telescopes and binoculars are wonderful inventions. And their attempt to tear down the house. 657 Boulevard survived your attempted assault and stood strong with its army of supporters, barricades of gates. My soldiers of the Boulevard followed my orders to a T. They carried out their mission and saved the soul of 657 Boulevard with my orders. All hail the Watcher.
Are they talking about the other neighbors and things?
Yeah.
I mean, like, sorry, really quick. I'll say, I don't know, I think it was based off of, like, an actual movie or something like that, but there was, like, a Psych episode, if you've ever seen it, where, like, Lassie, like, if anybody's seen Psych, there's, like, an episode where, like, Lassie rents, he gets an apartment in this building, and, like, once he moves in, like, all these weird, creepy things keep happening, and he finds out it's, like, I think it's mainly one neighbor, and, like, everybody else is just kind of weird in general.
Yeah.
But, like, trying to, like, spook him out of it. I'm like, is that, like, what's happening? Because I also remember, like, this thing when I did forensics, a different class in high school where it was, like, we had to compare handwritings, and it was, like, the original handwriting compared to, like, someone else who forged that person's handwriting, and, like, they're kind of hard to tell, like, at some points, you know? Yeah. I was like, is it, like, a collective group of neighbors? Is this, like, a weird cult?
They just didn't like them? I don't know. I know, like, the suburbs can be crazy sometimes. So he was really mad, and then he said, maybe a car accident, maybe a fire, maybe something as simple as your mild illness that never seems to go away, but makes you feel sick day after day after day after day. Maybe a mysterious death of a pet, loved ones that suddenly died, planes and cars and bicycles crash, bones break. So, he'd been obsessed with it, basically the family, and it sold in 2019 for like, they lost like $500,000 on it, especially if you include the renovations they did. It's definitely that much. And they said, the guy Derek said it had never left them. They don't know anything about who could have done it. And this is the last letter. It says, "You are despised by this house, and the Watcher won." So they never received anything, but I haven't, when I looked into it, I didn't see any, like, new letters or anything from the new people, so I don't know. A lot of people, I saw, like, I looked at, like, a Reddit forum.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people think it was Derek. They think there's something off about him. A lot of people think it's just someone that was mentally ill that just was, like, writing them letters, which is kind of what it sounds like, but they just don't know who did it, and it's, like, really creepy, and, yeah.
I would say if it was someone who had, like, because I've, like, seen things where it's, like, people who might have, like, mental illnesses, like, they'll act out things from, like, actual books or movies. Like, they'll think they're a character, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, it's, like, maybe it's something like that, or, I don't know.
Or he did feel like he had a claim to the house, but, like, for some reason, and...
Yeah, like you said, it could have been a descendant of either the actual family or, like, of someone who worked in the household.
Yeah, or someone who just, like, was mad about it, because it's, like, it was a beautiful house. I looked at pictures of it. On Zillow, and it's, like, nice and all, but it's creepy.
Yeah.
Oh, well, let's hear yours.
I was gonna say, there's also a trash can behind you, if you wanna, so you don't have to hold onto your nasty rag. Okay, so, mine happens more of, like, in the mid-1800s. I went old school, because I was like, I'm not gonna have, about to have someone come after me if they hear this. But anyways, so this is about Lizzie Borden, which I don't know if you heard this story before, but I guess it's the story of the axe-wielding spinster is the, not title she was given, but, like, I think for it.
Interesting.
So, first of all, I guess there was, like, a limerick almost? Not a limerick. A rhyme. There it is. There was, like, a rhyme made, I guess, about her that people just kind of, like, made up over the years, which, I'm gonna read it, but for some reason, I feel like I've heard it before, but I don't know where or when, or if it just, like, sounds similar to something else I've heard, like, oh, you know what? I feel like I vaguely remember reading this book in, like, elementary school, like, third grade, that my teacher had, which had, like, spooky, like, poems and things in it. I wonder if it was in there. Anyways, so it goes, Lizzie Borden took an axe and gave her mother 40 whacks. When she saw what she had done, she gave her father 41.
That does sound really familiar to me.
Doesn't it? Like, I don't...
Yeah, it seems like something, like, you just, like, read somewhere.
You're like, oh,
or, like, someone said to you at the playground or something.
Oh, my God.
I don't know. Like, it's, like, the ring around a rosy, but that's dark, too.
I guess. It's just, yeah. Okay. So, Lizzie Borden was born in 1860, and she was the youngest child of Andrew and Sarah Borden. Lizzie's mother passed away when the girl was just 2 years old, and she spent most of her life with her stepmom, Abby, so the dad remarried after that. So she was 32, I think, when about all this kind of happened or took place, I'm guessing. But she was, like, a very prominent figure in her hometown. She was very involved, like, with church and, like, Christian Temperance Union is one of the thing, and, like, a lot of, like, mainly church things, I think, but she was also, like, campaigning against alcohol and all that stuff. She was very, very involved, like, very in good things, I guess, which would be, I mean, like, what would be considered good things back then day.
Right.
And so, she has a sister named, oh, what was her name? Was it Emma? I don't see it here. I think it might be later. Anyway, so, neither of the sisters were married, so, Lizzie and Emma never married, and as a result, they both lived in the home with their 7-year-old father, Andrew. And their father was very rich. He was one of, like, the wealthiest men in Fall River, which I guess is where they lived, but he's also a very, he's a notorious penny pincher, which that means, like, they're very stingy, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Making sure. And then as for his second wife, Abby, sources claim she didn't really get along with her stepdaughters.
Okay.
When
does this take place? Like, what year?
I think it's a... I don't know.
Cause it's like 1800s, though, right?
Yeah, it's late 1800s. I think like okay. 18, probably around 1890 something, because she's 32 and she was born in 1860.
And where does this take place?
Fall River. But I don't know what state it's in.
Okay, that's in the United States, though.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
that's what I meant. States. I just meant country, sorry.
Oh, okay, no, you're good. But yeah, so their dad was very stingy, and the stepmother, Lizzie didn't like, and she wasn't really crazy about her home life, and it turns out that Lizzie's relationship with her parents was about to suffer some serious blows. Mm-hmm. That was a quote, and I read that because I was like, that is a very poor pun, whoever wrote this article. Like, very horrible literal. And poor pun. Okay. Oh yeah, so, 1892, sit her here. So, on August 4th, 1892, Bridget... Maggie Sullivan, who is their housekeeper, or their maid, she woke up sick, throwing up and stuff like that, and both Andrew and Abby were also very ill, and so Abby went to the doctor, told him she had been poisoned. He visited the house to check on Andrew, after she had come in, but Andrew sent him away because he didn't want to pay for a checkup. So they kind of just, like, they were like, oh, like, maybe it was just food poisoning, is kind of what they left it at, because since the maid was also sick.
Mm-hmm.
And so... After, like, the maid threw out the food that she thought would have been, part of, like, food poisoning and stuff like that, she was ordered to wash all the windows outside, which left Lizzie and her stepmother in the house alone, and the dad was out running errands, and Emma was with friends in town, and their uncle was visiting other relatives. I guess he was a house guest at the time. But, anyways... A little before 9:30, Abby went upstairs to make up the uncle's bed, and, like, it just seemed like a very typical day, like, nothing mm-hmm. was wrong. And then, around a little before 11, the dad returned home and just says the maid went to let him in. She heard laughing coming from upstairs. The maid wasn't sure what was so funny, but shortly after, Andrew stepped inside and Lizzie came downstairs and said Abby had received a note from a sick friend and had gone to visit. So while his wife was gone, Andrew just decided to take a nap. He was tired. So this is when the bodies are discovered. So about 11 a.m., around the time that the dad had decided to take a nap, the maid also went to take a nap, and she was only asleep for a few minutes before hearing Lizzie Borden scream for help. And she was, like, screaming, like, father's dead, somebody came in and killed him. The maid rushed down to see, like, what happened, but mm-hmm. Lizzie sent her away, so she didn't actually see the crime scene. Like, Lizzie was like, go get the doctor kind of thing, which also left Lizzie alone in the house. So as for Andrew, it was determined he had been struck 11 times by an axe or a hatchet, and whoever did the deed had chopped his face to pieces, which creates a very violent picture in my head. And like, I was reading this because, like, I'm someone who doesn't usually read or, like, watch violent things because it's just not my taste. I was reading this and I was like, ooh. I was like, that sounds ugh. Anyways, so as Dr. Bowen, was examining the corpse, a neighbor named Adelaide Churchill began wondering about Abby's whereabouts. Lizzie then claimed she had heard her stepmother return home and walk upstairs, so Sullivan, and Churchill searched the house, and that's when they found Abby lying dead in the upstairs guest room, the victim of 18 or 19 vicious blows. So she had been hit.
Jeez, that's a lot.
Yeah. And so during the investigation, the police found the head of the hatchet, minus the handle, down in the basement, and it was, while it was treated as a murder weapon, it was very clean, so for some, you know, for having killed two people, so it was, mm-hmm. like, very clean, which was odd. And because of how sick, the Bordens had been, their stomachs were sent away for testing, but no poison was identified, so I guess that... I'm not really sure why that's put in there. I guess that rules out... That means they were just food poisoning, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
But could you tell, like, poisoning, like, in the 1890s?
I would think... I mean, I don't know. Like, I would assume, like, some type of maybe residue or something would be left in the stomach, you know? Like, I would think...
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I know, like, I'm not an expert, but, like, now, like, certain... Like, you can run blood or whatever for certain things, but right. other things don't show up because, like, you only look for certain things. So maybe right. it was that kind of thing. Obviously, I'm not an expert or don't know
You're anything. Like, I am not a coroner.
I don't know anything, really, but...
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really know what they had available back in the 1890s, mm-hmm. so... Who knows? But, anyways, so the police was wondering if it was the work of an outsider... But the Bordens almost always had their doors locked, so mm-hmm. it was kind of unlikely. And so maybe they're like, oh, the killer was probably in the house the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
So almost immediately the police focus on Lizzie because she was the only person to have thought been in the house at the time of both murders. After all, there was a lot of circumstantial evidence pointing in her direction. Like, for example, for 3 days after the murders, Lizzie was seen burning a blue dress in her kitchen stove, and her excuse was that it was covered in paint, so she had to toss it in the fire. So there's, there's that. And then, according to a clerk at a local drugstore, Lizzie had come in the day before the murders, hoping to buy prussic acid, I think that's how you say it, which is incredibly poisonous. She claimed she wanted it for cleaning purposes, but the timing was odd, and the clerk refused to sell it without a prescription. So, there was also the issue with a barn, when she asked where she was during the murders, or during the dad's murder specifically, she claimed that she was up in the loft in the barn out back, eating fruit and looking for fishing sinkers. And she said she spent a lot of time out there, but the police were skeptical because they're like, it's too hot of a day for anyone to want to stay out there that long in a stuffy barn. And they didn't see any footprints in the loft.
Yeah, and you wore those dresses.
Yeah.
In that time. It's hot.
Others are wondering how Lizzie could have been inside for Abby's murder and not have heard the sound of vicious attack. Wait, what? Where is she? Oh, and not have heard the sound of vicious attack. So that's sort of like, if your mom was murdered, how would you not hear?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I mean, like, if she was like, oh, yeah, like, they're murdered. Like,
yeah,
like,
she was,
oh,
like, stabbed, like, what was it, like, 17 times or something?
Yeah. So
you hear them.
Alice Russell, and, oh, also the house wasn't that big, so, like,
yeah.
So Alice Russell, which is Lizzie's friend, claimed that Lizzie had recently mentioned she was worried something bad might happen to her father. And there was also the whole thing with the note that Lizzie said Abby had received that morning saying that her friend was sick. And the police couldn't find it anywhere. Plus, the timing just didn't work out. Abby was killed around 9:30 and Andrew was murdered about 11. And they're like, if a stranger did commit the crimes, he would wait. Like, he waited 90 minutes in between. You know what I mean? Then left. Mm-hmm. You know, left and then came back. And, like, that's not usually something
they're like,
a killer
okay,
would do.
One sec.
He's like, I need a break.
Yeah, they were like, let me chop. I have to chop your face up into pieces, but I'm like, I need to eat real quick.
I need to get a snack. I need to sharpen my blade.
Yeah. That was a little gruesome. I'm just gonna, like, it's like when you take a break from, like, a serious show. I'm gonna watch some The Office or whatever. So, yeah. I'm gonna go sit at the pond.
I'm gonna get a cup of tea.
Yeah.
Come back later. So, Lizzie went on trial after all that, because, you know. So, when she was questioned at the coroner's inquest several days later, things didn't go well for her. Her testimony was full of contradictions. So this all started on June 5th, 1893. I'm trying to figure out where I am. Okay. So the prosecution dramatically revealed Andrew and Abby's skulls, prompting Lizzie to faint in the courtroom. And then things only got worse for the state when the judges ruled Lizzie's inquest testimony was inadmissible, partly because she hadn't had a lawyer at the time and partly because she'd been questioned while under the influence of a doctor prescribed morphine. And so the judges also threw out testimony about the prussic acid. So, as for the defense team, they did a great job of getting the state's witness to contradict themselves as well as discrediting several of the prosecution's biggest arguments. So, for example, the state claimed the reason no one ever found the handle of the murder weapon was that Lizzie had burned the shaft because it was covered in blood, but that was impossible to prove. So they could be sure that she actually was the one with the axe in that case. They also pointed out how clean the hatchet head was and how unrealistic it would be for Lizzie to wash the murder weapon and hide her bloody clothes in the few minutes between killing Andrew Borden and calling for Bridget Sullivan. I didn't mark this down, but I guess I can read it. The state argued that maybe she committed her crimes in the nude. But,
imagine.
But the defense were like, no, because she was also a respectable lady, and she did commit it, she certainly didn't do it naked. Like, that's like, she's like, it's too hot.
So they're like, yeah, I committed these, but I didn't do it naked. They're like, that's the most offensive to me. Accuse me of a crime, but nude.
Anyways, and the lawyer, her lawyers did find witnesses who had seen a suspicious character in the vicinity of the Borden house. And then there's also the handyman who had been working in the loft shortly before the crimes, calling the police's footprint evidence into question. Because they said they didn't find any footprints, right? Mm-hmm. And so, Lizzie's lawyers kind of, they basically washed everything out that they had gathered at the, state attorney's had gathered. Anyways, so I think, oh, there's just, okay, there's just the one theory. I thought there was multiple. So there's the money theory is what it's called. So they're saying that what could have motivated Lizzie to turn her parents, to turn against her parents, was the fact that her father was very wealthy and stuff like that. So he, Andrew Borden, was one of the wealthiest men, like I said, with an estate worth about $7 million by today's standards, but he was insanely stingy. Mm-hmm. And things got worse when Andrew gave a house to Abby's sister in 1887. Evidently, Emma and Lizzie thought that their father preferred his in-laws over his own flesh and blood. And so they're still saying that, like, maybe Lizzie was guilty still to this theory, that the money and the hatred of her stepmom led to some serious bloodlust, because I think, yeah, just because they never, oh yeah, sorry, for money and because they didn't like their stepmom, so they're like, maybe she just out of her, you know, got rid of her. So the verdict, Lizzie Borden's trial lasted 2 weeks, and by the end of it, it was looking like she might walk away clean, and the defense has successfully stopped key prosecution witnesses from testifying, and they made her look like a virtuous woman and capable of doing such a thing. So when the jury returned after 90 minutes, they pronounced Lizzie Borden not guilty.
Not guilty?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's kind of it, sir. I'm trying to figure out where I am. So, that's kind of where they left it, because I think it was one of those things, I mean, there is a quote right here from media, where it says, like, it will be with a certain relief to every right-minded man or woman who has followed the case of the New York Times that the jury at New Bedford, has not only acquitted Miss Lizzie Borden of atrocious crime with which she was charged, but had also, oh my gosh, has done so with promptness that was very significant. Which, and it wasn't really that important, but, like, anyways.
Yep.
And so, it's fair to say that the state failed to prove Lizzie's guilt, and it's also fair to say that the all-male jury was probably influenced by certain attitudes of that day.
Mm-hmm.
And as many pointed out, people in 1893 couldn't believe a woman like Lizzie, a Sunday school teacher from a wealthy family, could have committed such a ghastly deed. And so, regardless of everything, like I said, she walked out of the courtroom free of charges and everything like that. Oh my gosh. Why? Oh, there is another theory. What in the world? Sorry, my computer's going weird.
No problem.
So, her life after the trial is just kind of like a little bit of a summary of kind of what happened afterwards. Uh-huh. So, she actually ended up putting her father's money to good use, it says, and she bought a house in an upper-class neighborhood. She shared the house with her sister Emma for a while, but they soon had a falling out when Lizzie became obsessed with the theater, and particularly, I can't say that word particularly.
Particularly.
Yeah. Well, she became obsessed with an actress by the name of Nance O'Neill, and there was, like, suspected that maybe she and him had some sort of relationship, but either way, Emma was, like, she moved out because her sister was getting a little weird after that, like, just spending money and whatnot, and after that, they never really...
You have some murdery vibes.
Yeah, you got some vibes I just don't get. But yeah, so Emma moved out after her sister kind of just started throwing parties and everything like that, and they never patched things up. So, in addition to buying a new house, Lizzie changed her name to Lizbeth. Not Elizabeth, Lizbeth.
Lizbeth.
Which I,
It's, like, one of those names that people are inventing now.
Yeah. She visited big cities, like Boston and New York, but she, no matter where she went, everybody kind of knew of her reputation, or old reputation of, like, you know, that she could have been a murderer.
Mm-hmm.
and so, like, many people, while she was not found guilty, they still had their suspicions, and eventually they turned everybody in Fall River turned their backs on Lizzie, because they're, like, you know, murdery vibes.
Yeah.
And, like, nobody sat next to her in church, and she became, it says, she became something of a ghoul for the local children, so I'm guessing that means.
I mean, it's kind of sad.
Yeah.
She might have chopped someone's face to pieces, so.
They said they would hurl rocks and eggs at her house.
Oh, I thought you were going to say at her. I was like, jeez.
And that's where it's a jump rope rhyme. Okay, that rhyme that I read to you, it apparently is a jump rope rhyme.
Oh, okay.
I don't think that's where I ever heard it when I played jump rope. I feel like nobody's saying that.
I still feel like I've heard it before.
Yeah. So, after all that, though, she became sick and had health problems, and she passed away June 1927. She was buried next to her parents.
Hmm.
And it says, and as you might have guessed, no one attended her burial. That's so sad.
That's really sad.
That's really sad.
She's, like, next to her parents.
She's, like... so, other theories. There was other theories. I forgot.
Okay,
it's further down. Here. But they're very short, like, one-sentence kind mm-hmm. of things. So, there was someone who thought that maybe Lizzie was the victim of a sexual abuse at the hands of her father. And she eventually snapped.
Mm-hmm.
And in this theory, Abby was killed because perhaps for refusing to stop the abuse. So, there's that one. Someone also suggests that maybe the maid, Bridget Sullivan, went axe crazy. I said that really weird, but axe crazy. After she was ordered to wash the windows because it was hot outside and she felt ill, which...
Someone ordered me to wash the window. What would I do?
Which I feel like that one's not as likely as the other one's. Like, she was like, I am ill, it is hot, you're dead.
Like, don't even ask me.
Anyways, so something that Lizzie and Bridget conspired together, while others thought that maybe Emma was a mastermind, which I guess could be true, but, like, her sister wasn't really mentioned in the article that I read.
Right.
But maybe she was, I don't know. But she also seemed like a pretty normal person in the family from what I read.
Huh.
And then there was also the theory that Andrew had allegedly had a mentally challenged, illegitimate son named William who slaughtered Andrew after the businessman refused to comply with his financial demands. Which, I guess I should have looked into William more because I don't know where he came in from all this.
I see.
And then there was, like, the wildest theory suggests that Lizzie suffered a seizure caused by menstruation.
Oh my gosh.
And then they sent her into a state where she unknowingly diced up her dad.
I mean, I get that way too. I would love that.
And they said, if she actually did kill him, maybe she hid her bloody clothing amongst her menstrual rags. They're like, correctly knowing that no 19th century policeman was going to take his investigation that far.
I mean, that's a good
one. That's kind of where it ends. Because after that, it's just kind of, like, the legacy of her, like, her showing up on, like, TV and, like, multiple movies and everything like that.
Yikes.
Oh, it's in Massachusetts. That's where Fall River is, I think. I believe so. But, yeah, so...
Interesting.
Oh, there were slides containing samples from Abby Borden's stomach. I did not find those pictures, nor will I care to.
Let me look into the contents of her stomach.
I like that last theory. They're like, maybe.
Yeah, it's like, maybe this happened.
Like, maybe she just really was not having the time in her time of the month.
Yeah,
and just,
like,
snapped. But yeah, so that was that one. It was interesting to read.
Yeah,
I feel like I feel like I kind of did a scattered job explaining it. I have a problem when it comes to, like, reading notes for some reason, or just reading out loud in general. But, and like I said, I don't normally read. Like, I was trying to figure out if I should do one, like, this gruesome, or find another one to do. But then I was like, well, this one's actually kind of interesting, because it's also, like, the longest one I found. But anyways, yeah.
Interesting. I like it. I mean, I can't even, like, take off a day of work for my period, so we'll see. If I might kill someone.
You're like, Watch out.
I'm like, this is proof. I have to stay home today.
You, like, send this article to them, and you're like, look what could happen.
I'm like, just so you know.
This could happen. Get ready.
Please.
But yeah, I guess that's kind of where we're end things. Tomorrow is Halloween. Well, for us it is. For you guys, it will be 2 weeks in the future.
I don't know.
If that makes sense.
I can't use that.
It'll be the second week of November for you guys.
Yeah. Right? I guess. I don't know. I can't think of that math.
We're making these ahead of time. Let's just say that. So tomorrow for us, it'll be Halloween. But yes. By the time you guys hear this, it will be past that. So happy Halloween to you, Rebecca, because we can't say to them.
Yeah. It might be Thanksgiving. I don't know. I can't do this math.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry.
So that's all we have. You can subscribe to our channel. You can check us out on Instagram. It's marvelous, _mysteries_podcast on Instagram. And then I made a Twitter now, and that is Marv Mysteries. You can only use so many characters.
Okay.
The username. Like, that's why it's like that. Otherwise, I'd just make it the same. But you can follow us on Twitter, Instagram. You can subscribe to our channel. And yeah.
We'll try to find, like, pictures and things supposed to go along with,
So you can check out key images.
Yeah, like, the unsolved mysteries and conspiracy theories that we're doing as of now, so look out for those.
Yeah.
I feel like this podcast went a little bit better. Our first one...
We're sorry.
We're so sorry. We had complications with it. We were supposed to be filming it,
We gave
the
up
camera,
on that.
The camera cut out on us after 3 minutes. I think we're going to explain this in the last podcast, maybe. So we just decided to do audio, which I find much more enjoyable.
Yeah. So these are better. So thank you for listening.
Thank you so much.
We'll be posting weekly. So we'll see you guys next week.
Yeah. Bye.